Hari Om to all of you. Today we are going to commence on chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita, and this chapter is entitled Karma Yoga, or the Yoga of Selfless Action, and contains 43 verses. Now we have heard that chapter 2 is the entire teachings of the Gita are contained in chapter 2. Both the parts of Karma Yoga, selfless action, and path of Jnana Yoga, path of knowledge, Krishna has explained very clearly in chapter 2. And there is actually nothing else to explain. There is no other knowledge that Krishna has to give. And both these two parts, Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga, are in tandem, or they are in connection with the teachings of the Vedas. Vedas also only prescribe two parts. So the Karma Yoga that Krishna is speaking about in chapter 2 comes from the section of the Vedas which is called Karma Kanda. And the Jnana Yoga that Krishna spoke about in chapter 2 comes from the section of the Vedas which is called Jnana Kanda. Jnana Kanda is also known as Upanishad. It is also called Vedanta. Vedanta, because it comes at the end section of the Vedas. So whatever Krishna wanted to relate to Arjuna, he has already completed in chapter 2. But there is a doubt in Arjuna's mind. There is some doubt which Arjuna expresses in chapter 3 verse 1 in the form of a question to Krishna. And because of this doubt, Krishna has to elaborate all the teachings which were given in chapter 2. So don't blame me if you have to study 18 chapters. It's not my fault. This, because don't say Brother Ashok only extend all the Gita lessons so long. It is because of Arjuna's doubt that he raises a question, and Krishna has to explain or elaborate what was given in chapter 2. From chapters 3 to 17 is an elaboration. And what is chapter 18? Chapter 18, Krishna summarizes the important points of chapters 3 to 17. Okay? Now, what is Arjuna's doubt or confusion and the question that he raises? We will look at chapter 3, verse 1. Arjuna vacha, Arjuna said. What did he say to Krishna? And Krishna here is addressed as Janardana. In line number 2, you will see Janardana, very beautiful address of Krishna, another name of Krishna. Jana means the people, you and me, we are Jana. Ardana means that which people pray to. So you are that which everybody prays to for blessings. And Arjuna is saying, I am also addressing you as Arjuna, because I also want to ask you something. So I am also praying to you to clear my doubt and confusion. Janardana. And what is my doubt? Jayasi chet karmanaste matta buddhir. Matta, I have heard your discourse on Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. And I have concluded, Arjuna is saying, that matta means your opinion. I have concluded that Krishna, your opinion is what? Your opinion is buddhi, the word buddhi here, which appears in line 2 of verse 1. Buddhi here refers to Jnana Yoga, the knowledge. So after hearing you, I have understood that your conclusion, Krishna, is that the path of buddhi, path of knowledge, you consider as jayasi. You consider the more it is more superior than what? Karmana. You have given more importance to the path of Jnana Yoga over the path of Karma Yoga. How has Arjuna come to such a conclusion that this is what Krishna means? And he's not wrong. Because if you look at the last verse of chapter 2, verse 72. Verse 72, chapter 2. After speaking about Karma Yoga and telling Arjuna you must do your duty as a soldier, then he also spoke about Jnana Yoga, and he concluded chapter 2 by saying that it is only the Sthita Prajna. Sthita Prajna means the one who is endowed with this knowledge, that means one who has gone through Jnana Yoga, it is only that person who will, at the time of death, will reach Brahma Nirvanam state, will reach the state of Moksha. So it is very clear that only Jnana Yoga can lead to Moksha, not Karma Yoga. Jnana Yoga will lead to Moksha. Therefore, Arjuna says in chapter 3 verse 1, from your discourse, I see that your opinion is that you consider Jnana Yoga more superior than Karma Yoga. Okay. So what? In that case, Arjuna is now confused. The next two lines of verse 1. Tat kim karmani ghorema. Tat. Why? Kim is why. Do you therefore push me into karmani to take up my duty in fight this war? And then so what type of duty is it? If it were a pleasant duty, nice duty, you tell me go shopping, I will go, no problem. Right? If it's a pleasant, nice duty, I wouldn't even question you. But what is that duty that you're pushing me to do? It involves killing. It involves bloodshed. And that also, if it involves killing Karna, I don't mind. I can kill him 2 times also. If it involves killing Duryodhana also, no problem. But who have I got to kill? Bhishma Pita, Dronacharya, people whom I worship, people whom I love, who have given me so much love and affection. I should be offering flowers at their feet. How can I even think of driving arrows into them? Such a dreadful action you're asking me to do. It is not easy. My mind is already troubled. I am already confused, and on top of that you keep pushing me to do this action. Yet you are telling me that this action is not going to take away all my sorrows. It is only Jnanam which will take away my sorrows. So it is like supposing I offer you 2 pieces of chocolate. And I tell you, chocolate A, chocolate B. Between these two, chocolate A is very tasty. Full of nuts, full of chocolatey taste, very delicious. It's much better than chocolate B. But you take B. You're telling A is better than B, then why are you asking me to take B? This is exactly Arjuna's question. If you say Jnanam leads to Moksha, then why should I go and fight this battle which is troubling me already? Better I leave the battlefield and go and take the life of sannyas, which is what Arjuna already wanted to do. And here is the irony of Arjuna's question or Arjuna's confusion. He calls his duty karmani as what? Ghore. Ghore means dreadful action, painful action, troublesome action. How can your duty be troublesome action? Isn't it, doesn't it not reflect all our lives also the same? If you were to interview everybody in this room, especially those who have worked in a job, and tell them, how is your job? They will say, I have the most worst boss in the world. Nobody has a more worse boss than me. I have the worst colleagues in the world. They never do any work. Whole day gossiping, gossiping only. I am the only one doing work. And then they backstab me, and then all kinds of office politics they play, and everybody will tell you that they are always underpaid and overworked. Nobody will tell you they are overpaid and underworked, isn't it? So how can here you consider your duty? What is Arjuna's duty? Kshatriya, soldier. What is your responsibility? You have to uphold dharma. When you have to uphold dharma, you may have to fight, you may have to kill, but as a soldier, it is your duty to uphold dharma. It doesn't matter who is on the opposite side. It can be your beloved grandfather, it can be your beloved guru, but as long as they are on the side of adharma, your duty as a soldier is to fight that. And if you have to kill, you will not incur any papa, which is what Krishna also told Arjuna in chapter 1. By killing, you are not incurring papa, because you are doing it as part and parcel of your duty. And this is the confusion all of us face, because we categorize our duties into favorable and unfavorable. Favorable we love to do, and there are many unfavorable duties which we don't like to do, which we try not to do, which we try to escape from. You know, I was taking a class in one place, and the majority of the students there were teachers, and teachers in government school there also somehow. So whenever we talked about this karma yoga, you know, do your duty, surrender everything to God, you know, don't get disturbed, you know, they said, brother, you don't know our students, you know. Rowdy bunch of fellows, they will be jumping and screaming, you can't discipline them, how to teach them? You say karma yoga, keep your mind steady, how to keep mind steady? All the fellows are so rowdy fellows. So how this karma yoga, we cannot understand. You know, it is very troublesome to discipline the students. Luckily in my class also, there was a veterinary surgeon, and he said, look at my job, I have to deal with animals. I have to, and he operates on chimpanzees, monkeys, elephants, all kinds of strange animals. He is called always to go and treat them. And he told us, once he was called to go and treat a monkey in a zoo who was having some problems. The minute he entered the monkey cage, the monkey was quite agitated due to something. The monkey jumped on him and bit him on his arm. So he showed us the scar on his arm. Then he showed us another scar here, on his leg here, one here. Every other animal he treated him has some or other attacked him. So he told the teachers, at least you're lucky your students don't jump on you and scratch you and bite you. Now whose job is more difficult? Your job or the veterinarian's job? So all of us think we have the worst job, just like Arjuna is saying, Krishna, you are telling me to do my duty, which is the, I consider the most difficult, troublesome, difficult duty to do. So, what does he say? He says, why do you urge me therefore, Krishna, to do this duty? Better is I take to path of knowledge, which will give me peace of mind, which will give me moksha. And in verse number 2, he carries on his line of argument. What is his line of argument here? He says, Vyamishrene vavakhena. Vakhena, by your very words, by your very speech, vakhena, you are vyamishrene. You are puzzling me, or you are confusing me. Your very words are confusing me. And in this statement of Arjuna, there lies a very beautiful meaning also. He says, you look at the word in Sanskrit, there's one eva, vyamishrene eva vakhena. He is not directly accusing Krishna of confusing. He is saying what? Eva vyamishrene. It appears as though you are confusing me. Because Arjuna has faith in the Guru, he has faith in Krishna. He is telling Krishna, it is not that you are deliberately confusing me, but I think I have not understood clearly what you have said, what you have thought. So I am not accusing you of confusing me, but the words, the way you put it, appear a bit confusing to me. And why we notice that Arjuna has full confidence in Krishna? Because he is not walking away. He is not saying, Krishna, when I came to the battlefield, I was already confused. Then I surrendered to you. And what you are doing? You are confusing me even further. If Arjuna considers Krishna as a confusing teacher, what would he do? He would walk away. He said, I don't want to listen anymore. See, just like the students here, supposing they say, brother, you are confusing us. We came to study the Gita, but you end up confusing us. So next week we are not coming back. So next week I am going to notice who doesn't come for Gita class. Then I know I have confused you. So Arjuna is not walking away, and there is another beauty here. Our scriptures allow us to question. If you have a confusion, if you have a doubt, there is nothing wrong to question. But question with what? With humility, with honesty. Have faith in the scriptures, have faith in the Guru, and question to remove your doubts and confusion. So here he is saying, it appears as though you are confusing me. Not accusing him of confusing me, but as though. And he says, buddhim moha yashiva me. Here buddhi means my mind is already confused now. I am not able to understand what you are trying to tell me. Moha, I am in the state of delusion. Remember, in chapter 1, Arjuna fell into a state of delusion. Despite hearing Krishna's teachings in chapter 2, he still could not get out of this delusion because he was unable to grasp what Krishna was trying to tell him. So he says, that delusion, my mind is still in that delusion. I am unable to comprehend what you are trying to tell me. Therefore, he says, tat ekam vada nischitya. That ekam, now, since you have told me there are two parts, now you please choose one path, ekam. Vada, tell me that one path. Nischitya means without any wavering, very firmly just give me that answer. I don't want to hear karma yoga, I don't want to hear jnana yoga, I don't want to hear any more lectures. Because I am already confused. So, what I want you to do, Arjuna is saying, you now choose for me that one path. If you say, Arjuna, karma yoga you will do, I will straight away take my bow and arrow and go and fight. Or you tell me, Arjuna, jnana yoga you will do, I will leave this battlefield and take sannyas and go and get knowledge. So, you choose for me now, that yena shreyo ham apnuyam. By that one method, either karma or jnana, I will attain the shreyas, means I will attain the highest good. Because that is what Arjuna surrendered to Krishna. If you remember that famous verse in chapter 2, verse 7, he surrendered for shreyas, not for prayers. So he is saying now, I surrender to you for shreyas. You please now choose for me one part, tell me for certain what you want me to do, I will just follow that. Now, so he has surrendered to Krishna and asked for an answer. So Krishna is Arjuna's guru. Arjuna has left it to Krishna to select one part for him. And what does Krishna do? Krishna is a guru. He can tell Arjuna, you can do karma yoga. Since you have asked me to choose for you, you can do karma yoga, shortcut, no need to elaborate some more. You ask me to choose, I am choosing for you. But Krishna is what? Krishna is Vande Jagat Guru. He is the greatest guru of this earth. And what is the difference between a guru and a teacher? What is the difference between a guru and a teacher? No insult to teachers here, but what is the difference between guru? I am a teacher, I am not a guru. What is the difference?
Guru removes ignorance. Teacher just teaches the
knowledge. Teach knowledge. So what's the difference?
Guru shows the way.
Huh.
And guides you, but the teacher just explains and then leads you to find your way.
Guru means spiritual knowledge.
Yes.
Whereas teacher gives academic knowledge.
The Guru has experienced God.
Sorry?
The Guru has experienced
God. God, right.
Whereas the teacher
has not experienced God.
Not fully. Has fully experienced
God. A God realized person.
Yes.
See, a teacher gives you information, but that does not make you independent. Every time you need information, you have to rely and come back to the teacher. Whereas a guru gives you information that leads to your transformation, and that makes you independent. The guru does not want you to be dependent on him. Because why? Why does the guru not want you to be dependent on him? No attachment. Because one day the guru also has to go, isn't it? How long is the guru also going to be there? So if you are going to hang on to the guru, one day the guru also has to go. So the guru's job is to make you independent. Take this knowledge, go and reflect on it, and then you absorb the knowledge and you apply it for yourself. Similarly also, Krishna does not give a straightforward answer to Arjuna, because his job is to give you the knowledge. You are supposed to take the knowledge, reflect on it, and come to your own conclusion and decide whether you want to follow or don't follow. At the end of chapter 18 also, when Krishna has concluded all his teachings, he tells to Arjuna, now I have given you all the knowledge. And what do I want you to do now? Yatha ichhasi tatha kuru. Tatha kuru means you do yatha as ichhasi, as you desire, as you wish. You don't have to follow my teachings. If you find there is some validity in the teachings, there is some substance in the teachings, you follow. If you find that no, I don't believe in this, I don't understand all this, I don't want to follow, it doesn't make sense to me, it is also your right. Because we have what we call free will to choose. And when you make the choice, if you make the wrong choice, you suffer the consequences. If you make the right choice, you also enjoy the benefits. So, God is there as a silent witness. Knowledge is available to us, but we have the right to choose whether we want to follow or we don't want to follow. And then we have to also face the consequences. So when we come to verse number 3 now, Krishna starts to answer Arjuna. He does not give him the choice straight away. He says, I will explain to you Karma Yoga. I will explain to you again Jnana Yoga. Then you will decide what you want to do. I am not going to make the decision for you. So from verses 3 now, Krishna will start elaborating about the glories of Karma Yoga. He will go in depth into Karma Yoga. So these chapters are all linked. 3, 4, 5 will explain in depth again both the parts of Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. You will find 3, 4 and 5 a lot of repetition as Krishna tries to make Arjuna understand the importance of both these two parts in order for him to make the decision. And then he culminates the whole discussion of Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga in chapter 6, where he says that it has to culminate in meditation. Chapter 6 is all about meditation. So he explains Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga in chapters 3, 4, 5 and culminates the whole discussion in chapter 6, ending with meditation. That is the first section of the Gita, the first 6 chapters of the Gita, that has one section by itself. So now let us look at what Krishna has to say about these two parts of Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. Sri Bhagavan Vacha, now Krishna speaks. He says, Lokesmin, Asmin, in this loka, in this world, Dvivida, two, Nishta, path I have given. Now be very careful here to understand. Dvivida means two, plural. But Nishta is singular, it is one. So there are no two separate parts, but there are two sections of one path only. there is only one path that leads to God. But in this path, there are two levels. So Dvividha means two levels of the one path, which I have given in this loka. When have I given this? Second line. Pura prokta maya. Maya means I. Prokta, I have spoken about this. When? Pura. Before. Where before? Where have you spoken about this before? When did you speak about this before? Huh? What? Ages ago. How long ago? How long ago? Previous birth. Some earlier. Beginning of what? Beginning of creation. Where? In the Vedas. I just mentioned at the introduction, right? That the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita conforms with the knowledge of the Vedas. There is no difference. It has only been simplified in this dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna. Because the Vedas are very extensive. There are 100,000 verses in the Vedas, thousands of verses, sorry, maybe not 100, but thousands of verses in the Vedas. Four Vedas are there. What Krishna has done in Bhagavad Gita, through this dialogue of Krishna Arjuna, he has simplified the two parts of the Vedas, karma and jnana. So, pura prokta maya, I have given before, and he will say again in chapter 4, verse 1, he will say, I gave this knowledge to Vivasvan, the sun god. And the sun god started his journey when? At the time of creation, the sun also was created. So old is this knowledge, so ancient is this knowledge, yet it has survived the test of time. It has been there for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. It has never died, this knowledge has never died. So ancient and so, precious is this knowledge. It has helped, ages and ages of people all the way down the line. So, pura prokta maya. And he addresses Arjuna as anaga. Anagaha means sinless one, the pure one. Meaning, he is telling Arjuna that you are also now ready for this knowledge. That your mind is pure. Your mind is also clean. You don't have any dirt in your mind. You have surrendered to me. That means you have no doubts or suspicions in your mind. So you are ready to receive this knowledge also. And what are the dvividha? What are the two parts I've given? He says in verse number 3, jnana yogena samkhyana. For the samkhyas means those people who have already purified themselves, who have a firm control on their mind, whose mind is pure, whose mind is fixed, whose mind is calm, and these people are introspective people. They spend time on reading, they spend time on introspection, their mind is ready for that. For those people, I have given Jnana Yoga, the path of knowledge. And then not everybody is like that, because not everybody is ready to spend time on introspection, on reflection, etc. Many people are active in society, they want to contribute to society, they have family, they have businesses to run. What about for those people? For those people, he says, karma yogena yogina. For these yogis, he calls them yogis. Yogis are not people who sit in temple and wear orange clothes. Yogis are you and me. People who are extrovert, people who are involved in society, who have families, who have career, professions, business. So for those people also, I have given them a sadhana that is called karma yoga. Important point to understand, therefore, that this between karma yoga and jnana yoga, you don't have an option. It is not a choice. Both you have to go through. This was Arjuna's confusion. Why should I do karma yoga? Why don't I just jump to jnana yoga? what Krishna is going to explain, that you have to go through karma yoga to purify your mind, to prepare your mind for knowledge, attain knowledge, and go into meditation and then attain moksha. That is the same path has been prescribed in the Vedas, the same thing that Krishna is going to repeat here. Without karma yoga, jnana yoga is not possible. Without jnana yoga, karma yoga is incomplete. That is one thing we have to remember. Whether you are a sannyasi or whether you are a householder, you have to go through both paths. You cannot escape. Okay. So that means between karma yoga and jnana yoga, you have no choice. Okay. Now, there is another thing. With these two parts, karma and jnana, there are three possible lifestyles that you have a choice. You can choose. So when it comes to karma yoga versus jnana yoga, there is no choice. This is important, this is also important. You have to go through both, and not in reverse order. Mean what? Karma first, then going to jnana. Okay. But while you have no choice in these parts, there are three types of lifestyles you can choose. And what are the three lifestyles which are given in the scriptures, which you can choose how you want to go through? What is the first lifestyle? The first lifestyle, you want to close one of those icons, brother? Want to close one of those icons? Isn't it quite cold? Can somebody just off it? That one especially. Yeah, this one especially. Okay, thanks. Those are the wrong ones. Instead of karma yoga, I went to jnana yoga. Okay. Yeah, try to close that one and open that one. Thanks. Okay. So, what are the three lifestyles? The first lifestyle that the scriptures say is, as you all know, there are four what we call ashramas, right? The Vedas give us the four ashramas. That is, the first ashrama is called what? Brahmachari ashrama. And the second ashrama is Grihastha. Third lifestyle is ashrama is Vanaprastha. And finally there is Sannyasa. So there are four lifestyles which are prescribed in the scriptures. What is the first lifestyle we can choose? We start with Brahmacharya, which is the student life. Then we go to Grihastha householder life. In the Grihastha householder life, we practice Karma Yoga. So we are given ample opportunity to practice our duties to our family, to society, to everything, to the nature. Right? Remember the five Pancha Mahayajnas. We have ample opportunity in the family life to practice this Pancha Mahayajnas, purify ourselves. Then what do you do? Move to Vanaprastha and eventually go to Sannyas. What is Vanaprastha? Vanaprastha is when your children have grown up and they move and set up their own house, then husband and wife are left together alone, and that is called Vanaprastha stage. Then Sannyas is when both husband and wife separate and live a life, ashram life, where they give up everything. So first lifestyle is from Brahmacharya, go to Grihastha, practice Karma Yoga, Pancha Mahayajnas, contribute to society and family, purify yourself, go to Sannyas and take up Jnana Yoga. Fully dedicate your life to Jnana Yoga. Attain the knowledge, attain moksha. That is first lifestyle. Go through all the four ashramas. That's why each of them is called ashramas also. House also becomes an ashrama. The grihas can also, you can turn your house into an ashrama. Okay, what is the second lifestyle? Second lifestyle is, you finish brahmacharya, you go to grihas, in the householder life, you practice karma yoga, purify yourself, then you don't change the ashrama, you don't take up sannyas, you don't have to go to ashram. Everybody is very happy now. You don't have to go to ashram, you don't have to put on orange robes, you don't have to take up sannyas, but what you do? Remain in grihas and take up the path of jnana yoga. Dedicate, slowly reduce your karma yoga and increase your jnana yoga. Spend more time on studies, on this knowledge. Attain knowledge, meditation and attain moksha. So that is your second choice. You don't have to go to ashrama life. That's why the house becomes an ashrama. Third choice is, you go through brahmacharya, then you skip grihas, you skip vanaprasth, and you jump straight into sannyas. Also possible. Where we are given many examples in the Upanishads, people like Adi Sankaracharya and many other sages, Swami Vivekananda, who at a very young age renounced everything, did not go through grihas or vanaprasth and jump straight into sannyas. So, three lifestyles, you have a choice. But when it comes to karma and jnana, you don't have a choice. Whichever three lifestyles you go through, you have to go through karma and jnana. Now, between these three lifestyles, each lifestyle has its advantages and disadvantages. It has its plus points and minus points. If you take the first path where you go through all the four stages, it is a very stable progress. It's a very smooth progress. That's why scriptures advise us to go through all these four stages. That means eventually take up sannyas. But if you chose to remain in grihas, in the household life, and do karma and jnana, there are many challenges. When it comes to karma yoga, you have no challenge. Because why? You have no issues. If you want to do dana, you are working, you have a job, you got money, you can easily do dana, isn't it? You want to serve society, you have the capacity to serve. You have money, you have also a lot of people to help you to do a lot of seva. So when it comes to karma yoga, you can serve your family, you can serve society, you have ample opportunities in grihas. In the second lifestyle that you choose, there are no obstacles. But big obstacles when you come to jnana yoga. In a householder's life, the biggest challenge is when you come to jnana yoga. Supposing it is 6:30, you are leaving for Gita class now, Thursday. You have packed all your bags and your books and everything. As you are about to leave, friends drop in. Or in-laws drop in. Ding dong. What do you do? I got to go Gita class. No, we have dropped in. We came for so far away. How can you go for Gita class? So what do you do? Go back, prepare some snacks, and you have to serve them, you have to take care of them. So many challenges are there in grihas. Working life is there, challenge is there, you are tired after a long day, you might not want to come for the Gita class. So many challenges are there. But for karma yoga, no problem. Now, in sannyas also, there are many challenges. Because in sannyas, you don't have money. If you take up sannyasi, you don't have bank balance. You don't have a job. Where are you going to get money to go and do dana? So how are you going to do karma yoga in sannyas life? You see, it becomes a challenge. You don't have resources. You don't have people to help you. You want to set up ashram, you need money. You need people to come and help you. So in sannyas life, karma yoga is a big challenge. So how do you purify yourself? Jnana yoga comes later. How do you first purify yourself? Since you have jumped to sannyas, you decided to put on orange robes and go and jump to sannyas, Now you got a problem. How do you purify yourself? Sorry?
Begging for food.
Begging for food.
They go through
purification. So for sannyasis also, there are many other different types of purification processes. You can do japa, you can do guru seva, you can do tapas, you can fast. There are many other options also available. But what I am trying to say, you still cannot escape karma yoga. So karma yoga becomes a challenge because of limited resources, but it is possible. Purify yourself. But the easiest path for a sannyasi is what? Jnana yoga. There is no challenge because you got ample time. You don't have business to run, you don't have an office to go to, you don't have family to take care of, you don't have any responsibilities. So you can devote maximum time to jnana yoga. So what Krishna is trying to say in verse 3 is that one has to go through both paths, karma and jnana. And these three lifestyles which I told you about, in that you have a choice. Okay, this is what the scriptures give us, three choices to go through. Now, having explained these two parts to Arjuna in verse 3 now, from verse 4 onwards, Krishna will talk about the benefits of karma yoga and the glory of karma yoga. Why one should go through this karma yoga process. What are the advantages, the benefits, and what is the glory of karma yoga? So now let us look at verse number 4. In verse number 4, he says, Na karmanam anaramban. Okay, first of all, he is warning us here that why should we take up karma yoga? Why should we not run away, avoid our duties? Here he says, man does not attain freedom from action by abstaining from work. Freedom from action here, the Sanskrit word is naiskarmyam. So if we decide that I want to escape from my duties, and by not doing my duties, I don't get into any conflict. This was Arjuna's problem. This duty is causing me a lot of conflict to go and fight this battle. So what do? I escape away by doing my duty. By escaping away, I don't have to kill my beloved people. But Krishna is telling him that there is a purpose for you to do your duty. Physically, you may give up the duty. But what is the purpose of karma yoga? If done with the right attitude, karma yoga done with right attitude, what does it do to us? It purifies the mind, isn't it? Therefore, by giving up your duty, how are you going to purify the mind? It is only by doing your duties, taking up all your duties, responsibilities with the right attitude, you will purify the mind. Hence, if you try to avoid doing your duties, run away from your responsibilities, you can physically run away from everything, but can you mentally run away from everything? The impurities which are in us, ego, envy, pride, jealousy, can only be diluted by doing our actions in the right attitude. So the problem is not in the action, the problem is where? Problem is in the attitude, it is mental. We have to address the impurities here. So what Krishna is saying, by abstaining from duties, you cannot attain the state of naishkarmyam. Naishkarmyam means that purity of mind. You will not be able to attain that state. And furthermore, he says, nor does he by mere renunciation of action attain perfection. Here perfection, the word used is siddhim. He is saying that just by changing your ashrama, you think that if I change my ashrama from grihas, I become a sannyasi, I go to ashram and take up sannyas, you will still not attain the state of siddhim. Siddhim means what? That firmness of mind. Because when you go to ashram as a sannyasi, what is the main activity that you have to engage in? What is the lifestyle of a sannyasi? What is his main preoccupation with? Pursuit of jnana yoga, pursuit of knowledge. But if you have gone to an ashram just by changing your robes and going to ashram, if you have not purified yourself in the karma yoga stage, how can you even absorb this knowledge? Because you need the purified mind to absorb knowledge. So, action is very important. You run away from action, you avoid your duties, you will not purify your mind. And by just changing your ashrama also, you will not attain what we call firmness of mind, because you won't be able to receive this knowledge. You won't be able to understand, you won't be able to retain this knowledge. So that's why he's saying both karma yoga and jnana yoga must go stage by stage. You don't just jump into sannyas also. Okay, that is verse number 4, where he's explaining the importance of karma yoga and the importance of jnana yoga also. Now, in verse number 5, he continues to explain about this path of karma yoga. When he says, Nahi kaschit chanam api. The impurities in your mind that you have, whatever is the nature of your mind, he says, nobody can remain inactive even for a minute. Why can't you remain inactive for a minute? Because if you look at the fourth line, Sarva Prakriti Jai Gune. This Prakriti is what? Your body, your mind, all this is made up of matter, Prakriti. In this Prakriti, there are the three Gunas. And these three Gunas are in all of us, Sattvic, Rajasic, Tamasic. So by physically restraining yourself, your actions, what happens to the three Gunas in you? If you physically restrain your actions, what about the three Gunas which are in you? Sattva is there, Rajas is there, Tamas is there. In fact, most of us will have more Rajas than Tamas, very little Sattva. So what happens now? You have physically tried to restrain your action, you try to avoid your duties, avoid your responsibilities, because you don't want to face the conflict. Then what happens to the Gunas in you? They are still there. And these Gunas, he says, will drive you into some action one way or the other. You cannot escape from them. So even if you don't want to do action, like Arjuna is telling him, you are a Kshatriya by birth. By birth you are a Kshatriya. The Gunas in you also make you a Kshatriya. You've got very strong Rajasic Gunas. If you run away from this battle, take up sannyas, what will you do then? You run away to ashram. What will you do there? If you are a businessman, you decide to give up your business and you go to ashram, what will you do? You start Sudran Bharat there also, isn't it? You will start a business there also, because your gunas are driving you. So the purpose of doing karma yoga is what? To increase your sattvic gunas, to subdue your rajasic gunas and your tamasic gunas. You can only do that if you take up action with the right attitude. Once you take up action with the right attitude, your sattvic gunas will get stronger. Your rajasic gunas and tamasic gunas will get subdued. That's why when you go to a sannyas life, whether you decide to be in a household, you see the household has been designed. It has been designed for you to subdue your rajasic tamasic gunas. Imagine if in a household there are so many challenges, isn't it? I don't get my breakfast on time, what happens? You get angry, right? And if wife cooks for you same food every day, what will you do? You will complain. So if you are not ready to handle the householder life, can you imagine those rajasic, tamasic gunas in you? You go to ashram and for lunch you get chapati and dal. You get two chapatis and dal for lunch, right? And then you look forward to dinner. What do you get?
Chapati.
Two chapatis and dal. Tomorrow lunch, what do you get? Two chapatis are done. Are you ready for it? So household life, if you are able to control yourself, if you are able to discipline yourself, can you imagine that when you move into sannyas life, whether it is in the household or whether you go to ashram, it is a natural progression. There is no disturbance in your mind. So it is not that we should not have likes and dislikes. Supposing I like coffee, I don't like tea. That is not the problem. All of us have a mind, and the mind creates the likes and dislikes, raga dvesha. But where does the problem come from then? Even as a sannyasi, you may have likes and dislikes. You may like to eat a particular type of vegetable, you might not like another type of vegetable. But where does the problem come? Having likes and dislikes is not the problem. Where does the problem come from?
Meditation from that. You can't be able to get your coffee, for example, you get very irritated.
Exactly. So, overcoming the likes and dislikes means, if I have coffee, fine. If I have tea, it's also fine. I don't allow that to disturb me. I can have a likes and dislike. I prefer coffee and I don't prefer tea. But if you serve me tea, I'll take it also. You see, even sannyasis, there are two types. North Indian sannyasis are used to what type of food? Chapati and dal. South Indian sannyasis want what?
Rice.
So say rice. But they travel all over India. So whatever they are given, they eat. They don't make a fuss about it. They have a preference, but they don't allow it to rule their lives. They don't allow it to overcome their mind. So the grihas household, that's why it's called an ashrama. If I can get along with my family, if I can get along with my neighbor, my relatives, my in-laws, then when I go to ashram also I have no problem. Otherwise I go there and fight with everybody also, isn't it? So the grihas is a very important household that prepares us for sannyas. And this is what Krishna wants to say. Nobody can remain inactive, because it is the gunas that are driving you. And the purpose of performing karma yoga is to dilute the rajasic and tamasic gunas and strengthen your sattvic gunas. Okay. The next verse now, verse number 6, he says, such a person who just restrains his organs of action, karmendriyani samyamya. Karmendriyas are our organs of action, our hands, our legs, etc. If we just samyamya means we just restrain them, and while we restrain the organs of action, manasa, the mind, what is it doing? Smaran, is running all over the world. Right? Just like Kabir wrote so beautifully, the man who is sitting down and doing his prayers, the tongue is rolling the names of God. You know, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. The fingers are rolling the prayer beads, but the mind is rolling all over the world. That is, you are unable to control the mind. So merely restraining the organs of action, sitting down, you are unable to restrain the mind from running all over. Krishna uses such harsh words on such a person. He says in the fourth line, mithya chara, he is only a hypocrite. You know, you see the person, what a jnani, is sitting down and meditating for 15-20 minutes, but you don't know what's happening in his mind. Their mind is running everywhere in the world. So what actually, the Bhagavad Gita also continuously will keep on emphasizing that the problem is in the mind. We have to gain mastery over the mind. If you are unable to gain mastery over the mind, whether you are in the grihas ashram or whether you go to a real ashram, you are going to have a problem. We have to learn to gain a mastery over the mind. Therefore, he says, such a person is vimudatma. In third line, you see the word vimudatma means a deluded person. One who is cheating himself and cheating society. Totally under delusion. Just restraining the organs of action but unable to control the mind. And there's one beautiful story also which is told in the scriptures also. A story about this king called Brihadhari. One day he just decided, he was a king, He had a kingdom and everything. He just decided one day, I want to renounce everything. I want to give up everything. And I want to take sannyas. So he gave up his kingdom, gave up all his possessions, his riches, everything he gave up. Put on orange robes and he went to a cemetery, a crematorium. And he sat there and decided to be a sannyasi, renounce everything. In a crematorium also, when people used to come and cremate bodies, after they cremate, they used to leave some rice offerings and some water as offerings. And this King Brihadhari used to survive or subsist himself on that food and water. So he just left it to God. He said, I renounce everything. Whatever people come and offer there in the crematorium, I will survive on that. One day it so happened that for almost 3-4 days, there was no cremation. So nobody came to cremate. There was no food available. There was no water for this king. So the poor fellow was starving. No food to eat, no water also. At that time, it so happened that Lord Shiva and Parvati were passing through there. So they saw this great king who had renounced everything, sitting at the crematorium, hungry, 4-5 days hasn't eaten, hasn't drank any water, thirsty. So Parvati told Lord Shiva, she said, Swami, see what a great tapasi he is. He is a king, he has given up everything, and the poor fellow is sitting there, starving, no food, no water to drink. Swami, he is such a great tapasi. Shiva said, no, he is not a great tapasi. Why do you say that? He said, I'll prove it to you. You come now. So, Lord Shiva took the form of a beggar and he told Parvati, you take the form of a beggar's wife and I will prove to you that this fellow is not a great tapasvi, not great renunciate. So, they approached this guru, sannyasi. At that time, it so happened that one procession came to do some cremation. So, they did the cremation and they left some rice and some water. So, finally, the king was happy. 4-5 days, I haven't eaten. Now, the rice and water is there. Time for me to eat. As he was about to eat, Lord Shiva and Parvati came in the form of beggar and they told his king, sir, we have not eaten for 1 week. Can you please give us some rice to eat? So, he took half of his rice and he gave to Lord Shiva and Parvati. As beggars, he didn't know. He gave them half the rice. Then they said, sir, this is not enough. You know, 1 week we have not eaten. How can you give so little rice? So he said, okay, now I will take all the rice. So then Parvati told Shiva, you say he is not a renunciate. What a great person. He has not eaten for 5 days and all the food he has given us. How can, you know, you see, husband, when you open mouth also, be careful now. Now the wife is going to catch hold of you now. So now Shiva is now in a spot. So he says, no, wait, I will prove it to you. Be patient now. So they add the food. Now the king had no food to eat. What did he have still? Water was there. So he said, at least I'll drink the water. My hunger will subside a bit. As he's about to drink the water, Lord Shiva comes again. Sir, we also not drank any water for the last 7 days. Can you give us this water also? He said, okay, take the water also. So poor king now, no food, no water. So Lord Shiva takes the water back to Parvati, they drink. Now Parvati says, see, I told you, isn't it? Such a great renunciate is, food also all he gave us, water also all he gave us, poor fellow got nothing to eat, nothing to drink, and still you say he's not a great renunciate. Hold on, I'll prove it to you, hold on. So, now he goes with Parvati back to the king. He says, thank you very much, sir, you have given us your food, you have given us your water, we notice you have nothing to eat and drink, we really bow down to you, you have really taken care of us. What does the king say? He says, what have I done? I've just given you food and water. But what have I given up? Do you know? I've given up my kingdom. I gave up my riches. I gave up my throne. So that is something, you know, I've given up. So what is food and water is nothing. So now Lord Shiva says what? Look, he has given up physically, but mentally he's still thinking about it. You see, huh? So how can you call him a great sannyasi? When you give up means you give up physically, you also renounce mentally. So such is not a great sannyasi. One who is given up means is totally given up. And that's what Krishna says here. Such a person is nothing but a hypocrite. Once you have given up, then you should not even think about it. So therefore, renunciation is very, very dangerous if you have not prepared your mind for it. And Karma Yoga helps us to prepare our mind for it. So meet every challenge. Everything in our family life, in our business life, poses a challenge. The reason it poses a challenge is for us to address the situation in order to purify ourselves. Action, therefore, must not be avoided. It is the attitude to the action that has got to be changed. Once the attitude is changed, the outcome of the action also changes. Now, what is the right way, therefore, to live our lives? How do I learn about this Karma Yoga? How do I apply it into my life? This is what Krishna wants to start discussing now from verse 7 onwards. From verse 7 onwards, he will tell us the glory of Karma Yoga, how we should take to the path of Karma Yoga, and what is the glory of Karma Yoga. The glory of Karma Yoga, especially, he will talk about, is threefold. There are three main advantages to Karma Yoga. The first advantage, which he will explain, I will just briefly cover that. The first advantage that he will explain is, Karma Yoga way of life has been prescribed right at the beginning of creation. When Lord created the world, He gave mankind this path of Karma Yoga to live. Since we are also created by God, therefore we must also learn how God intended for us to live the right way, the dharmic way. He gave us this Karma Yoga path right in the beginning of creation itself. It has not changed. It is the same formula which has helped so many people. So one is that it is the law of God. It is the order of God. It is the command of God that is given this Karma Yoga for human beings how to live your life. Animals don't have to be taught how to live Karma Yoga. Why? They don't have intellect. Or why they don't have to be taught about Karma Yoga?
They do it instinctively.
They don't have to go through four orders of life. They don't have to take up grihas and vanaprasth and all that. We have to learn how to go through the ashrama and how to purify. Whereas animals live by their instincts. So number one, it is the order, it is the command of God for human beings how to live their life in the right way according to Dharma. Number two, glory of Karma Yoga, we must understand one very, very important thing. Every action that we do has got a reaction somewhere. Whether good or bad, there is a reaction somewhere. So, Krishna says, to maintain the harmony of the whole universe, the harmony of creation, what he calls, he's going to introduce a new term called yajna. When we live according to Karma Yoga life, it is called yajna, meaning sacrifice. Meaning I do action and others benefit. If I have that attitude, I am contributing to the whole harmony of the universe. Everything works in a perfect balance because you are following God's laws. So if we look at everything in the creation, the trees, the clouds, the rain, everything has been designed in the spirit of yajna. That means if I also do my actions in the spirit of yajna, I am also maintaining this worldwide harmony and balance also. And Krishna will tell, when you do, you don't lose. Because yajna, the word sacrifice sometimes scares us. Sacrifice means what? I just keep on giving and giving. Krishna says, no. When you give, you also receive. And when you receive, what must you do?
Share.
Share also back again. Why should you share? I do, I receive. Why should I share? So, to maintain the harmony, the universal balance. Because you are also receiving. What you receive, all doesn't belong to you. Part of it only belongs to you. You have been always blessed with more. So you take that out a little bit and you give. When you give danam, do you clear out your whole bank balance and give? You give a little bit what you can afford. Even you do seva means you are giving a little bit of your time. isn't it? So whatever you get, you take a portion of it and give back. So in yajna, you never lose. You give, you receive, you share back again. You receive again. You must keep the cycle moving. When you stop sharing, what happens? You break the cycle. When you break the cycle, then you suffer. Okay, so second glory is it's yajna. Third glory is, he will explain, it helps to, or rather it is the purifier of your mind. So all three glories are there. It is the command of God you are following. It is a yajna, by giving you also gain and you share back, you keep the cycle moving. And third is, it helps in your purification of mind. So all these glories and the way we should perform karma yoga will be explained from verses 7 onwards, which we will come back next week and discuss. Now, this the thing is, I always request that if you have questions, please do ask. Because if you have any doubts or any doubts,